Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to Africa. Africa, a continent of mystery and intrigue. Parts of this vast continent are still unexplored. Africa has a desert that is larger than the entire United States. It is called the Sahara, so it's not surprising, I suppose, to learn that it is the hottest continent in the world as well. It is also a part of the world where most of the gold and diamonds are found too. And elephants, giraffes, lions, and more wild animals than anywhere else. In fact, it's the last place on Earth where lots of wild animals still have a place to live. So it's a really interesting place to visit. So let's begin with a story about animals, since Africa has so many different species. This one is called Why the Crab Has No Head. A very long time ago, before man came along to upset the natural balance, all animals lived together peacefully. But in those days, none of the animals had heads of their own, except the elephant, who was the king of the animals. He had a large collection of heads in all shapes and sizes, which he kept stored in a large cave. Every time an animal wished to leave the village compound to go out into the field or the bush, he would go to the elephant first and ask to borrow a head. On his return to the animal village, the head would be returned to the king's store. This worked very well for a time. The only problem was that there were not quite enough heads for all the animals. There always seemed to be one short, so at least one of the animals always had to stay behind in the village. Eventually, some of the animals became dissatisfied that every time they wanted to go out, they had to waste time to collect a head and then return it again. The king agreed to have a meeting, and it was decided that each animal should be given its own head to keep for all time. The king started making all the arrangements, assisted by his secretary, the crab, and when all was ready and all the heads were lined up in the village square, he sent out the cockerel, who had been given a head for this purpose, to announce that all animals should come to the square so that the king could give them a head. The cockerel went round the whole of the village, and everybody who heard the message rushed to the square. When he thought he had informed everybody and was just making his way back to the square, the cockerel spotted the crab without his head, meandering down a track on his way to the riverbank. The cockerel advised him to make his way back to the square quickly, but Crab just shrugged. "I am the secretary of the king," he said. "The king will keep a head for me. I am sure of it. I need to have a quick bath. I will see you by and by." And he sauntered on his way. At the village square, where all the other animals had gathered, the elephant started giving out heads. He tried to make sure that each animal received a head that suited it. So the hippopotamus got a very large fat head. The rhinoceros got a head with fierce-looking eyes. The giraffe got a long head to go with his long neck. Nobody liked the hyena very much, so he got the ugliest head there was. But the antelope, who all thought was the most graceful of the animals, got the most beautiful head. This went on all morning until all the animals had their own head. Just as the king thanked the cockerel for his work and was about to return to his palace, the crab came sauntering back.
"Where have you been hiding out?" asked the king. "I'm afraid all the heads have been given out, and there is not a single one left for you."
However much the crab protested, there was nothing to be done. And that is the reason why to this day the crab goes through life without a head. Now we're going to hear another story about animals. It's called How the Frog Came to Be the King of the Rivers and Marshes. I selected this one because it speaks to the great joy the people of Africa have when the rains come. Being so dry and hot there, the beginning of the rainy season is a cause for celebration. So here's the story, how the frog came to be the king of the rivers and marshes. There was a time when animals and people lived on the earth harmoniously side by side. Each respected the other, and they went out of their way to be friendly and peaceful to each other. The elephant, being the king of the animals, decided one day that there should be a king of the rivers and marshes. He thought it would be useful to have somebody responsible for alerting people to the coming of the first rains so that they would have time to get ready and start preparing their tools and seeds. The king of the animals sent out his trusted town crier, the cockerel, with a message that any animal who wished to be considered should attend the king's court the following morning. The cockerel dutifully made his way all round the animal village, passing the king's message to all and sundry. The next morning, the elephant came into his courtyard after having partaken of his breakfast and found a number of candidates for the post had gathered there. The cat was there, and the monkey. Toad and frog stood side by side. Flamingo was there, and the crab had also turned up. The elephant inspected each one of the candidates and started weighing up their qualities for the position. To the cat, he said, "Cat, you don't even like water. You run away and hide at the first sight of rain. How can I make you the king of rivers and marshes?" So the cat was dismissed. To the monkey, he said, "Monkey, I'm very happy to see you here, but you are so playful and forgetful. I am afraid you might forget your duties because you always put playing first. I can't consider you for the position." So Monkey was dismissed. To the flamingo, he said, "Flamingo, you would be very good for the post. You love being in the river. But I'm afraid your voice just is not loud enough. Nobody would hear you. I can't make you the king of rivers and marshes." So Flamingo was dismissed. To the crab, he said, "My dear crab, how could I make you the king? You don't even have a head. Where would we put your crown? You can't be the king of the rivers and marshes, I'm afraid." So Crab was dismissed. That just left Toad and Frog. The elephant scratched his head with his trunk. "Fellows," he said, "I can't really make up my mind between the two of you. I am sure you would both be very good at the job. You both have wonderful voices. I just can't choose." Then the cockerel suggested there could be a race to decide the issue. The king agreed immediately. "Let there be a race," he proclaimed. "We will start here in the courtyard, and the first to get to the riverbank will be crowned king of the rivers and marshes." And so the race was organized. The king, followed by a host of animals, made his way to the riverbank so he could see with his own eyes who the winner would be. The cockerel remained in the courtyard with the two contestants so that he could give the starting signal. When all was ready and in place, the cockerel let out a mighty screech, and Toad and Frog were off. They jumped and double-jumped and triple-jumped as fast and as long as they could. Toad was actually the quickest, and he had built up a small lead when suddenly he came to a halt. There in front of him was a wide and deep ditch. Toad could not remember it being there before. It must have been created during the last storm. Toad was not at all sure that he would be able to jump across. In the meantime, Frog had caught up with him and also stopped. "Haroo!" he exclaimed. "A little ditch, that's nothing for me." He took a mighty jump, using all the strength he had in his formidable hind legs, and comfortably made it to the other side. Toad knew he had to get across, so he took a deep breath and used all his strength to jump. But poor Toad, he just did not make it. He hit the side of the ditch and tumbled all the way down to the bottom. So Frog was the first one to reach the riverbank and won the race. The elephant congratulated him, and he was duly crowned king of the rivers and marshes. At his coronation, the king of all the animals, elephant, made a big speech.
Frog, he said, now that you are the king of the rivers and marshes, your first duty is to announce the coming of the first rains so that all the farmers can get ready to start doing their important work. You shall do this by singing your croo croo song as loud as you possibly can and for as long as it takes to get the message to everybody. And that is the reason why, to this day, when people hear the frog song, they are very happy, because they know that the dry season is over and the rain they need to grow their crops is on its way. Our next story is entitled The Lazy Townspeople. Once upon a time, there was a town where all the people were exceedingly lazy. They didn't like to do any kind of work at all. They didn't clean up their yards, they didn't keep their streets clean, and they couldn't be bothered to weed their vegetable patches. The place was disgusting. It was a disgrace. The chief hated it. He quite liked cleanliness, and every so often he would start a cleanup campaign. But only a handful of people ever turned up to lend a hand, and even then, they would stop working after 1 or 2 days, and the weeds would grow again, and in the blink of an eye, the place would be just as bad again as it ever was. One day, a hurricane blew through the town. After it had passed, the place looked even worse than before. But the worst thing was that an enormous tree had been blown over and thrown right across the main road leading to the marketplace. The first trader came along carrying his produce and found the road blocked by the tree. He said, I haven't got time to move this tree. I've got to get my produce to the market. So he walked around the tree and carried on his way. And a second and a third trader came along and did exactly the same thing. Nobody could be bothered to do anything about the obstruction. People were coming and going, looking at the tree and just walking around it. The chief heard about the tree blocking the road. He asked, why don't some of these people get together and move it? But days went by and nobody did anything about it, and the tree remained where it was. The chief came up with a plan to teach his townspeople a lesson. Very early the next day, before the sun had come up, he took some of his servants and got them to dig a hole under the tree. He hid some gold in the hole and got his servants to cover it up again. Then he made them swear to keep this affair a secret. Back at his palace, he instructed his town crier to go round and summon all the citizens to gather at the spot of the fallen tree that afternoon. When they were all together, the chief made a speech to his people, suggesting that if all of them worked together, it would not take very long to remove the obstacle. One of the farmers said, "The hurricane put that tree there. Let's ask the hurricane to move it out of the way." "Yes," said another. "Why should we exert ourselves?" "What's wrong with walking around it?" asked another. The chief was exasperated. He was just about to give up when a skinny young man stepped forward. He was just a poor farmer who had no living relatives in the town. "I will have a go," he said, and started pulling and pushing to shift the heavy tree. The other townspeople just stood there and watched, some making fun of the young man. The chief waited for a short while to see if anybody would come forward to help the young man, and when he saw that nobody else made a move, instructed his servants to lend a hand. Once the tree had been moved to the side of the road, the chief went up to the young man and took him to the spot where he'd buried the gold that morning. The chief told him to dig there and promised him that he could keep whatever he found. The young farmer was starting to dig in the road and very quickly uncovered the gold. He was overjoyed. The chief said to him, "All this gold is yours to keep. You have deserved it, and you can do with it as you please." And to the lazy townspeople, he said, "Let this be a lesson to you all. Laziness doesn't get you anything. Rewards come to the person who is prepared to work hard." You are listening to Gima's Tales for Children on KCIW LP 100.7 in Brookings, Oregon.
Our next story takes us back to some of the animals from Africa. This one you might be familiar with, as you can also find it in the United States. And it's called How the Tortoise Got Its Scars. The grass shriveled up and turned a pale gray. Rivers and pools dried up. All day long, animals scurried around looking for food and finding nothing. Mr. Tortoise was getting desperate. Every day, he woke up to the sound of his wife and children crying. One day, while he was wandering the countryside looking for food he knew he wouldn't find, he noticed a flock of birds flying overhead and disappearing on the other side of the mountain range. The next day, he saw more birds flying in that direction and disappearing over the mountain range, and again the next day. It occurred to him they might be onto something, and he tried to attract their attention. He shouted, he screamed, he danced, he jumped up and down. He shouted while jumping up and down. He ran in circles and waved a stick. None of the birds paid any attention to him. None even slowed down. Many animals would have given up, but not Mr. Tortoise. He decided he would compose a song to the vulture. He thought the vulture might just be vain enough to stop and listen. That night, he finished composing the song, and the next morning positioned himself in a nice open spot by the side of a field. When he saw the first birds in the sky, he started to sing his song. The vulture is so good. The vulture is so wise. Everyone admires him as he flies through the sky. Yai, 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 yais. The vulture heard snatches of the song, and he was intrigued. So he came down to land and strode over majestically to where Mr. Tortoise was sitting. When Mr. Tortoise saw the vulture approaching, he sang again. The vulture is so good. The vulture is so wise. Everyone admires him as he flies through the sky. Yai, 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 yais. Ah, the vulture exclaimed. What a beautiful voice. What enticing music. Mr. Tortoise thanked him profusely for his praise, then asked very politely if he would ask a favor of Mr. Vulture. Certainly, the vulture beamed. Go ahead, my lyrical friend. Tortoise exclaimed that because of the drought, there was no food left where they were living. If Mr. Vulture could only give him a lift to the other side of the mountain so that he could look after his family. Vulture readily agreed to help his new friend. He raised himself and flapped his wings. Just hang on to my waist, Mr. Tortoise, and we'll be there in no time at all. Mr. Tortoise grabbed hold of Vulture's scraggy feathers. Vulture flapped his giant wings, took a few great strides, and up they went. And Vulture had been quite right. It seemed to take hardly any time at all, and they were floating over the mountains, and Tortoise could see a glimmer of green appearing below. A few more flaps of those giant wings, and they were landing in the middle of a truly amazing landscape. The place was covered in trees and bushes carrying every fruit imaginable. Mangoes, bananas, pears, oranges, apples, pineapple, papaya, plums, you name it, it grew in abundance. Tortoise walked around in a daze. He picked an apple here, tasted some mango there, found some blackberries on a small bush. The most remarkable thing was that apart from the birds, who must have discovered this pleasure paradise flying over it, there seemed to be no other animals here at all. This set our Mr. Tortoise thinking. Now, you may have realized already that Mr. Tortoise was not just any old tortoise, but that he had a very good brain and a great imagination. So slowly but surely, he hatched a plan. The next morning, he found a spot on the hillside, which gave a good view of the orchard. He stood upright and started speaking in as loud a voice as he could muster.
Yo, yo, all you birds, listen to me for a few moments. Yo, yo, I have bad news for you all. I'm afraid you're all trespassing here on this land. This land belonged to my great-great-grandfather. When he died, he gave it to my grandfather, and my grandfather left it to my daddy, and my daddy, well, now my daddy, he gave it to me before he died.
There was consternation among the birds. They weren't sure how to take this news. Then Mr. Tortoise carried on. I'm going to count to three, and at the count of three, I want all of you to have left this place. One.
Hey, Mr. Tortoise, you're joking, aren't you?
Is he joking?
No, man, he's not joking.
Two.
Some of the birds started flying.
We thought you were joking. We never intended to trespass. After all, we're all just law-abiding citizens, you know.
More and more birds flew off.
Three.
Now they were all leaving. Mr. Tortoise looked for his friend Vulture. When he saw him, he ran up to him and called out,
Hey, yo, Vulture, hold on, you're my friend, aren't you? You can stay here with me.
After feasting on the fruit for several hours, Mr. Tortoise had another idea. He really wanted to find out exactly what he had here, so he approached Vulture and said, Vulture, you're going to carry me high into the sky. Then I will know how big my own land is, and I will see how useful it will be.
Vulture replied, Yes, sir. Hang on to my waist.
So Mr. Tortoise clung on to Vulture's waist. Vulture flapped his wings, gently at first, and up he went. It was very breezy so high up in the sky, and Mr. Tortoise was enjoying himself.
Whoa, whoa, he shouted. This is wonderful. I'm enjoying this breeze. It's just beautiful.
Then, in his excitement, he started scratching Vulture's armpits. That was not such a wise thing to do.
Please, screeched Vulture. I'm ticklish. Don't do that. Please. Stop it, please. I'm so ticklish.
Unfortunately, Tortoise wouldn't stop. In desperation, Vulture shook his wings so violently that Mr. Tortoise lost his grip. He went down and down and down and down and down, and there was nothing at all to stop him. It was Mr. Tortoise's rather bad fortune to land in a place that was covered in hard, jagged rocks. There was an enormous crashing sound when he made contact with the rocks. Cracks appeared all over the body of Mr. Tortoise. He tried to shout for help, but his voice only made a very small sound. Luckily for Mr. Tortoise, Vulture saw him lying there, his body all cracked up, and felt sorry for him. So Vulture decided to get the ambulance, and they managed to get him to a hospital. Because he was in such a bad way and looked as if he could die any minute there and then, Mr. Tortoise was taken straight into the operating theater, and three doctors started work on him. They worked for hours on end, stitching all the cracks in his shell. Eventually, all the sores healed and he was discharged. But of course, he was left with the scars. And that is why every time you see a tortoise, you can still see the scars on the back of his shell. We're now going to hear about an animal that everyone knows lives in Africa, the lion. This story is called The Hunter and the Lion. Once upon a time, there was a chief in a village near the bush. This man had many sons, and one of them was the best hunter in the whole land. Whenever he went out hunting, he always managed to bring back much more meat than any of the other hunters in the village. But this hunter did not just like to provide meat for the villagers. He enjoyed the thrill of the hunt, stalking his prey and outsmarting it, and killing animals for fun. The chief often reprimanded his son because he knew that the spirits of the forest and the ancestors did not approve of killing for fun or sport. But all his exhortations fell on deaf ears. His son's behavior never changed. As for the animals, they were both afraid of and angry with this hunter, and they called a meeting of all the bush animals to discuss if there was not some way to stop this man. Some suggested setting traps to catch him, but everybody agreed that this hunter was too clever to fall into a trap. He would surely spot it from afar. Then the lion suggested that one of them should change into the shape of a young woman in order to seduce the hunter. Then he could be lured into the bush and killed. it was decided that the lion's wife should be the one to do this job. The next morning, the chief's son was getting ready to set out for the bush. He was gathering his weapons, his spear, his bows and arrows, and a machete, when his father approached him. "Son," said the chief, "please stay home today. I had a dream last night that you went into the bush and got killed by a wild lion. Stay home today, please." But the son brushed aside his father's concerns. "Pah, pah, don't worry, old man. I can take care of myself. Any beast that tries to kill me will get off the worst, I promise you." And with that, he set off, chuckling to himself. He had a good day in the bush and had already killed as much meat as he could carry, so he decided to call it a day and make his way back home. Then, to his surprise, he saw a beautiful young girl approach him. Beautiful young girls do not usually come this far into the bush, so he called out to her, "Sister, what are you doing here in the bush? I can see you are not from our village." She smiled at him. "I heard about you," she said. "I heard that there is a hunter who is smarter and stronger than anyone, so I decided to look for you, and here you are." "I am just on my way home," said the hunter. "Why don't you come with me to the village, and we will eat and drink something together?" She agreed. So he took her back to the village and his father's compound. The chief thought it a bit odd that this young woman had been walking around the bush all by herself, but he was so happy that his son had returned home and had not been killed by a lion, as his dream predicted, that he did not question her at all. The son, in the meantime, was falling head over heels in love with this strange young woman, and before the night was out, he asked her to be his wife. She laughed and told him that she would be very happy to be his wife, but she would have to ask her father's permission first. So they agreed that the next morning they would set off early and visit her father. So the next morning, after eating some fruit and porridge, they were ready to set off. The hunter was gathering his weapons, but the girl asked him to leave them behind, as she explained it would be rude to turn up at her father's house so heavily armed. The hunter agreed to this, so they set off, walking through the bush. When they had gone some distance from the village, the girl changed herself back into her natural lion shape and attacked the hunter, who, having no weapons, was unable to defend himself. That evening, while the chief sat outside his hut waiting in vain for his son's return, the animals celebrated. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback, too. You can email me at gima@kciw.org. That's gima, G-U-I-M-A, at kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to the Caribbean Sea to hear some underwater fairy tales as well as some old legends of the Carib people. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIW LP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon.